I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freund, and this is The Next Page. Hey, Marissa, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I am terrific.
That's great.
It's summer. The weather's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I've had chances to get out on the boat. I've gone fishing. But the days are getting shorter.
I know.
That's such a bummer.
But they're still quite long.
But they are. And we just have to realize that, well, that's life. You know, half the year the days are getting longer, half the year the days are getting shorter. And so I guess if the days are getting shorter, that means we're getting closer to Christmas, which is the most wonderful time of the year.
Maybe for you.
Maybe for me. Absolutely is for me. But you know what? I'm really getting to a point where I'm looking, I'm really enjoying every season, every week,
mm-hmm.
working to enjoy every day because it's a wonderful life.
Yeah, I think I told you earlier in the spring that that was one of my goals, was to have a more intentional summer and to really enjoy
yes.
it. And I think, you know, we already feel like we've done more this summer, which most of it was actually technically spring far, than we did all last summer. Because, you know, partially because the weather has been spectacular.
It has.
But finding ways to really maximize the hours and these extra long days and simplifying some of the other things that we normally would do on the weekend.
That's awesome. You know, simplify your life so that you can have time to do things that really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's awesome.
Yeah.
But today we're talking about fear.
Mm-hmm.
And the title of my post this morning was, "What's your fear factor?" And I was thinking about this. There were several things going on in my life in a certain period of time when I wrote this that had me thinking about fear. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about last week was we talked about me finding my why. And part of that process was looking back at memories from when I was much younger, going actually all the way back to the earliest memory that I could have. And if you didn't listen to last week's, go back and listen to last week's and this will make more sense. But some of the things that my recollections had to do with fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up, I was born in 1961, and there were some really turbulent times. The 60s into the 70s were some really, really frightening times in this country. There was a lot of civil unrest. There were a lot of major cities, you know, were having riots and things were on fire. And in fact, even here in Syracuse, I was at Roberts Elementary School. My sister was at Corcoran High School, and there was a riot at the high school. And we didn't call them lockdowns, but our elementary school was on lockdown until they could make sure it was safe for us to head home. Every night, I would sit and watch the news with my dad, and NBC Nightly News would begin every broadcast with, "What was the body count from the Vietnam War?"
Mm.
So there were, you know, and there were always the fallout shelters in the school. You know, where should we go if, you know, the Soviets launched a missile attack? And I mean, that was a very real thing for us. And it really had a lot to do with who I am and how I react to things today. I can remember hearing stories of people that lived through Germany's bombing of London. And how traumatized people were for years whenever they would hear, let's say, fireworks or something. It reminded them of things. And fear plays this, well, in some ways, an important role in our life. You know, I shared with you, and I even shared in my post, that I'm petrified of snakes. I hate snakes. So that's probably good, because if I was doing too much with snakes and not afraid of them, I might get bit.
Mm-hmm.
But so if some fear is good, other fear can be debilitating.
Right.
And so what I touched on in my post was fear at work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen that manifested in some organizations where there is the fear is almost palpable when you go into the place. It's in the air. It hangs in the air. A tension, a fear of retaliation. Maybe you've got a bad supervisor or even it could just be a bully, so to speak, on your staff that you're not even fully aware is there. These people can be extremely caustic to an environment.
Mm-hmm.
Another one could be for leaders, you know, that are afraid to hear the truth. You know, sometimes when I'll do a 360 for a leader, you know, they don't want to hear the truth. Well, the reality is if you don't hear the truth, you can't ever do anything about it.
Right.
You know, some leaders won't do 360s because they're afraid of what they might hear. And so that becomes almost a paralyzing thing for the organization. Supervisors or managers that won't deal with a conflict with an employee because they're afraid of how it might turn out. Again, things don't get done. So we see this fear manifesting itself in actually, it's a paralysis almost for the organization. They don't innovate. They don't come up with new ideas. They can't make any improvements. And sometimes you can actually see it if you look at some companies where they've been stagnant for many, many years. It could be that there's a culture of fear and intimidation that's really keeping them from addressing the things that need to be addressed, or for keeping from up. People aren't willing to speak up. They aren't willing to give ideas because it might be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be ridiculed by their boss for coming up with the wrong answer, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we also talked about, now, Marissa, you and I, we had a little bit of a conversation when I shared with you how bad I was afraid of snakes. And you talked about being afraid of animals and dogs and how you overcame that fear.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing to share how did you, because one of the things they tell us to do is to lean into the fear in essence.
Right.
And I just said, there's no way that I could lean into like handling a snake, but share with our listeners what you shared with me.
Yeah. I mean, I had never really thought of it this way before until you mentioned to me that, you know, one way experts recommend dealing with fear is to, like you said, lean into it and kind of recondition yourself, because essentially right. That's what a lot of our fears and anxieties are based off of. You know, we've been conditioned to fear, you know, a certain person at work, or to fear certain confrontations at work, maybe because of previous bad experiences. And so we start associating a meeting with a certain person as a negative experience, and thus
right.
The fear and anxiety. I had an experience that made me terrified of dogs. And I think it was about 6 years of an incredibly, and I mean like debilitating fear of animals. Like even if they were on leashes, kind of thing. I was forced with a scenario where I kind of had to become familiar with a friend's dog because I was spending so much time at her home and with her family, and it was no longer really fair for them to keep the dog, mm-hmm. you know, locked up all the time when I was around sure. so much. And so I had to slowly lean into the fear and recondition and kind of like retrain how I felt about scenarios to become comfortable with dogs. And it was sure. it was a long process of, you know, like, okay, look, the dog's name was Jenna, and it was okay, now just, you know, Jenna's on one side of the baby gate and you're on the other, just look at her. And then okay, mm-hmm. you know, come to this side of the baby gate, but she's on a leash, kind of thing. And slowly progressing into realizing that there was not a threat, an immediate threat.
Sure.
You know, sure, dogs, people, anything is unpredictable, but there was no immediate threat. And eventually working up to, okay, you know, pet Jenna or give Jenna a treat. And then eventually, I still remember the day, it was like, okay, today we're letting Jenna off the leash. And
wow.
Immediately from there, Jenna became like the best dog I've ever known. And I've had dogs, right. So she was way better than all of my dogs. And I mean, when she passed away, it was really hard for me because she was what changed my fear and then allowed me, like I said, I've had dogs since then, that I'm not afraid of, mm-hmm. not afraid of my own animals. And, you know, kind of reconditioned the way I feel about them and kind of controlled the experience.
Sure.
So
then that's so interesting, because now I'm not saying I'm willing to do that with snakes, but anyways, at this point, I don't understand. I don't see a need to get over my fear of snakes.
Mm-hmm.
But so what happens is, you know, we've had bad experiences, And we get conditioned to think that if this happens, this will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done the test like with lab rats where when there was a tone, they would give a rat a shock.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, they didn't have to give the shock to the rat. They just played the tone. And the rat acted as though it was shocked.
Right.
I read another one. I shared it with you, another report where it talked about a doctor that would, whenever he would shake someone's hand, would prick their hand. And so the person literally became conditioned to every time I shake somebody's hand, I'm going to get a shock so that when the, or a prick, so that when the doctor would mm-hmm. even just reach out his hand, the person would be reacting to it.
Mm-hmm.
So we can really see how that can easily work its way into our office or factory environment.
Right.
Where people that are bullies, mean, belligerent, whatever you want to call it, they're tyrants, can totally demoralize a group. I remember once a company where I worked, and every morning we had a meeting, and it was like at 8:15, and we would just stand around in a room and share whatever it was, you know, just a quick update on the day. It was like a 10-minute meeting. And I remember I was only there a couple weeks, and I said to my boss, I said, something's wrong in this meeting. He said, why? I said, nobody ever has anything to bring up.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's just standing quietly. And he goes, well, there's nothing. I said, you know, there's nothing. There's no way that there's nothing that these people have to bring up. Well, one day, a sales gentleman brings up, and he really was a gentleman, super nice guy, brought up something, and he challenged in a very, very nice way something that a supervisor had said. And then nothing happened in the meeting, but as they walked out of the meeting, this senior guy just went off on this gentleman.
Hmm.
And I happened to hear it, and he says, don't you ever do that to me again type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a retaliation for speaking up. So then I went back to my boss, and I said, let me tell you what's really going on here. I said, you know, these people are conditioned to not bring something up because of this guy over here. And unless we deal with that, you're never going to get the feedback from the team that you need in this meeting.
Right.
So apparently, I didn't stick around. I left the company after a couple years. And sure enough, after I left, they ended up having to fire the guy
mm-hmm.
because he just was a tyrant and he flew under the radar because he was very, very good at what he did. He was an expert on what the company did. He had been there 30 some years and everybody made excuses for how bad he was
mm-hmm.
because we can't live without his skill set. And it just the cancer that these folks can be in an organization is just unbelievable. We just there's no way for us to overstate the danger and the risk of having, you know, these types of fear mongering type behaviors
within our companies. It's just so bad for the organization too. I mean, like you mentioned, the innovation and the creativity you lose, the ideas that you lose when people are afraid to share ideas in the meeting. I mean, that's a problem.
Right.
And you're settling for, I won't even say mediocrity. I'll say like less than mediocre. I mean, it's like people are they're there, but they are really just contributing the bare minimum. They want to fly under the radar, stay on everyone's good side, you know, tiptoe around the, you know, quote, scary people or whatever, bullies, whatever we want to call them. And then the culture that enables is so upsetting, you know, to work in an environment like that every day is exhausting. And you pretty much just have a team of people that are eagerly looking for their next opportunity.
Right. And, you know, and so in all of the companies that I'm thinking of where I have seen this type of a mindset tolerated, all those companies struggle.
Mm-hmm.
They struggle just to stay in business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I've worked in companies and I've seen departments where this was the culture, those departments failed miserably. And then it's interesting, once the tyrant is gone, all of a sudden it's like life can be breathed into a department and, mm-hmm. and productivity just soars.
Right.
So it's not the people that were the problem, it was the leader
mm-hmm.
in that department. And we can see that in sports teams where you might have a team that's failing and they change the head coach out. And the next year, the team goes from almost last in their division to almost first. Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't change the players. They just changed the leader.
Right. And I think solving this is really twofold, though, because there are things that if you're an individual who is having this like fearful experience at work or anxiety at work, there's certain things that you can do to manage your fear and anxiety to a certain degree. But then there's also what does the organization need to do to ensure that they're fostering a healthy culture? Because really it is unhealthy if you have people feeling exactly this way, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, really.
So let's look at it in two different ways. Yeah. I'll talk about what the organization needs to do, mm-hmm. and then maybe you can talk about what the individual can do.
Okay.
So the organization, I think the first thing that a senior leader needs to do is if there's any sense that something's not right in the organization, productivity isn't where it needs to be, absenteeism is high, turnover is high, they really need to take a hard look at what might be going on in that organization. And the only way to really get that information and to get honest information is to bring somebody in to do some 360 feedbacks, mm-hmm. Where people can have a series of questions and they sit down with people in a confidential way and they ask questions. The difficulty in an organization that has a really bad issue with fear is that in some cases, the employees may not even be willing to talk to the outside consultant.
Mm-hmm.
They may be too afraid to speak up, fearing retaliation. But a good consultant should be able to get a sense of that. I mean, I've had that experience where you can walk in and you can almost feel the tension in the air. And if you ask enough open-ended questions, things really begin to unravel and you can find out what's at the core of it. So that senior leader has to take the initiative to say, I got to figure out what's wrong with my company. Maybe it's things I'm doing. Maybe it's people I'm tolerating that I shouldn't tolerate. And, you know, and once that can be addressed, then that organization can be freed up. The other thing that I do want to talk about just briefly before you get into what we can do as individuals, there could be fears on a factory floor that people don't understand. And let me give you an example there of a fear of injury or a safety violation type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the folks that know me well, and you know it, that about a little over a year ago, I cut my thumb on a table saw and I've used power tools my whole life. Being a tool and die maker, machinery doesn't scare me, but I literally stuck my thumb on the blade of a table saw and basically slit my thumb down to the into the bone. Fortunately, it's all there. Well, most of it's there, but they were able to wrap it up and I still have my whole thumb. It's numb, but at least it's there. But I remember every time I would think about my thumb hitting the blade, just getting so scared. And almost a panic attack type of thing. And I remember I asked my dad, who had actually lost part of a finger on a table saw, how long does this last? And he just said, a little while. You know, because every time I closed my eyes, my brain went to that event.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing I had to do was go back out and face the saw. And it's been over a year, and I use the saw fairly regularly. I am still afraid. And again, I'm a very safe person when it comes to these power tools. So it could be that an employee is actually fearful based on an experience they've had with a piece of machinery.
Mm-hmm.
So don't just assume the person's lazy. It could actually be a real fear of re-injuring or an experience, something they saw that they can't get past.
Right.
Maybe a lot of people could relate to this. If you had an automobile accident, getting behind the wheel again,
mm-hmm.
you know, you getting thrown off a horse, getting back on the horse kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that I think leaders need to look and see. Is there something underlying on the surface that may not even be work-related that's causing the fear?
Right.
It doesn't have to necessarily be a tyrant in the place.
Mm-hmm.
But help us figure out, how do we deal with like the, it's not a full-fledged fear, but it's like a tension and anxiety that might be in us whenever we get into a certain situation at work.
Yeah. So you shared an article with me from Success Magazine that I thought was really interesting that talked about the difference between like a low level fear and a high level fear. And really,
right.
The low level fear is kind of that everyday, they call it garden variety type of fear. So that's what anxiety is. It's this constant alertness to potential danger, in which you really can't, when you're feeling anxious or are having some kind of level of anxiety, this low level fear, you're not focusing intently on what you're doing, which like, that's what would be great right. for the workplace. And especially if you're in a factory, you want to be focusing. But instead of doing that, you're in this scanning mode where you're just looking for this potential fear. And so I think that's what a lot of us are experiencing on a regular basis rather than this like high level intense fear, but it's just as real and it's just as impactful on our bodies, you know, emotionally and physically, but also on the performance of a company. So they shared a couple tips that I wanted to share with everyone. One way to help like recognize this is through checking in with yourself periodically. And they recommend an hourly check-in. For some people that might be unrealistic. Hours can fly by really fast sometimes, but just these check-ins with yourself, like how are you feeling and scanning, like, are you holding some kind of tension or anxiety in your shoulders? I'm sure a lot of people are. Are you in a meeting and realizing that you're suddenly like breathing heavier or, because that's an indication that your body is giving you that something isn't right. And then recognizing that to determine like, okay, is this really a threat or is this kind of something that I was just conditioned to feel threatened by? And so working through those things can help reduce your anxiety and determining if there's actually a threat or not, in which oftentimes there isn't. It's just like you mentioned with the lab rats and the doctor's experiment, it's really just a reaction to something.
We've conditioned ourselves to think there's a threat.
Right. Yeah. The second tip I think is really helpful that the magazine shared, and it was to reduce fear with buffers. I love the word buffer. I think buffers are so important in all aspects of life, but especially if there's some kind of anxiety in your life. But they're, you know, we've talked about this many times, but kind of having a buffer zone between your work life and your home life. You've shared some tips on how you do a, 30 minutes or even 15 minutes at the end of your day to shut down and kind of ease out of your workday instead of like hitting the end of the day and just like turning off the light and walking out and driving home. Having that buffer, you know, maybe listening to podcasts on your way home from work or like a book on audio or something like that, just to help kind of end one activity and start the next so that you're not bringing that anxiety or negativity or anything with you home. They suggested setting up soft deadlines for things. So if you're someone...
Which I thought was a great one.
Yeah. If you're someone that who has a hard time, like with procrastination or things like that, that can help reduce the anxiety behind project work. I really liked this one to have transition time between meetings. And like, I'm sure we're all guilty of this. I know I am. We're just like rushing from meeting to meeting to meeting. And not having that time in between to maybe decompress from a situation or process what's happening. And then lastly, just like we mentioned before, kind of facing the fear with controlled experiences and trying to recondition yourself and how you react to situations. So finding a new way to respond to something that normally elicits a negative reaction from you. And that's challenging. I mean, that's easier said than done.
It is.
You have to be able to identify that you're feeling anxious or threatened. That's the first step. But then changing how you're going to react. So if normally, if someone someone that maybe is a bully at work, when they say something to you that is hurtful or confrontational, normally maybe you freeze, or maybe you back mm-hmm. down normally. That's your typical response out of fear. Recognizing that would be the first step. And then the second step would be changing how you respond. So maybe instead of, maybe you normally give a quick response back. Maybe instead of doing that, you take a deep breath and say, let me think about it and get back to you. Or instead Very of good. Backing down, you take a moment and pause and say, you know, I respectfully disagree, but I'd like to talk about yeah. it more to see if I can understand where you're coming from. Something like that to help change the situation. And then that'll help you kind of remove the fear and anxiety behind that situation or that person.
Exactly. Those are great. And, you know, the reality is that fear is in all of our lives all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as leaders, we need to do some check-ins with our teams. You know, how are you doing? One of the things that I added to my daily reflections is, what am I feeling? Mm-hmm. And I think I may have mentioned that on a previous podcast. I got that from Michael Hyatt. And it really, so all of a sudden, if every day for a while or several times a week, I'm feeling anxious, I can look at a pattern at my calendar and see what might be happening that's causing me to feel anxious. Mm-hmm. And then I can address those things. So clearly those are things that this whole emotional piece is huge, and we can't dismiss it. You know, when I was younger, we were just told work through it. Mm-hmm. You know, work's not supposed to be fun. Just suck it up and do it. You'll get through it, and then you get to go home. But we've realized that we've lost so much opportunity for productivity, creativity, and innovation because our workers are stressed.
Right.
And we need to be able to, you know, be smart enough to look at it and say, why are they stressed? Interestingly enough, I was listening to Dave Ramsey's book, Entree Leadership, which I highly recommend. It's an amazing book. And one of the things that he does is every week, all of their team members, and I forgot, several hundred people now work for the Dave Ramsey organization, but every week an employee writes a report to themselves, what they accomplished, what were their highs and what were their lows. Mm-hmm. And it's not as a report out to their boss. Now their boss gets a copy, but it's really for their own reflection. And what Dave said was that he'll look at those periodically. And if an employee, and some employees will talk about fears and things like that, and that gives Dave or another senior leader the opportunity to go and figure out, hey, what's bothering you? Right. Help me figure this. Help me help you. Mm-hmm. And that's a great leader. And when that happens, your organization is humming. Mm-hmm. Because people have given you not just their back, but their mind as well. So we've got to face fear. So we got to figure out what is our fear factor.
Right.
And hopefully we can all say that it's our level of fear right now is pretty low. Mm-hmm. Because that means we can get up and enjoy going to work.
Right.
So anything special happening in your life in this coming week?
Well, let's see. We're just waiting for baby at this point, I think.
That's right. You're getting, Marissa, we're getting close.
I know. So we'll see.
So hopefully you don't approach that with fear. You just approach it with joy and excitement.
Yes. Lots of excitement. That's how I feel.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Well, we're looking forward to that. And just so our listeners know that the podcast will still happen every week.
Yep.
We're recording episodes ahead. And we will have some people that I'll do some interviews with that will be having some guest spots until you're able to get back in the saddle, so to speak.
Yep.
Great. So with that, I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.